So, so thanks again for being here. And I was really excited to hear your podcast that you did with my friend Simone Cicero and with Stina last year. When there was a bunch of takeaways that I find extremely interesting, because they combine an aspect of epistemological and shift, and also apply to how we rethink the regulatory framework and the political framework, but also this connection with a shift in consciousness, especially consciousness bound to certain geographies. So you made a comment about Western countries and Asian countries, and especially like Asian country, that are they still think they can get capitalism right, you know, some this kind of modernity, so this resistance of modernity, yeah, that is trying to permeate also other countries. And then I think something that is really resonating with me specifically is this pulsation, this regeneration that is also tied to a new way of accounting for the energy flows. And I think, yeah, this is a very nice stage, because I mean, I think after anybody study a little bit of what's going on in the world, you cannot help but thinking that we need to somehow tie the thermodynamic nature of our biosphere with our constitution and with our laws. And of course, it's a problematic space. It's something that is not so also technically easy to be to do. But I'm very excited and curious to hear what you've been working on in that direction. And also, I think it's a nice stage because increasingly every year, the CCC is hosting climate aware and climate adaptation talks that are very specific also on the nitty gritty of, you know, all the planetary boundaries that we're hitting, inviting scientists and politicians and different perspectives. So I think this is a good direction that we are taking as a Congress. And so I leave the stage to you. With us, there is also Oliver Sauter, which is joining us at the end of the talk, but he just joined us in the room, and Jakob Huhn, which will also make some question at the end. So I'm gonna leave the stage to you, Michel.
All right, thank you so much. It's the first time I talk in a CCC related event, so I'm very happy with that. So basically what I want to do is, you know, we wrote a report at the P2P Foundation called P2P Accounting for Planetary Survival, in which we looked at emerging new forms of accounting and what that tells us about how we can reorganize our economic flows. So basically, can we produce for human needs within the planetary boundaries, right? Which assumes that we know when we make decisions what those planetary boundaries are. So the key issue that you know we have to solve as humanity is the issue of externalities, right? You have positive and negative social and ecological externalities. And the system that we have now, which is only based on, you know, the value of commodities, including the value of labor as a commodity, does not take into account these externalities. And there's been various studies showing that market pricing, you know, does not actually reflect any dangers to the ecology of the planet. So we have the sixth extinction of the animal and of the animal kingdom, and it's not reflected in our economy. We can't see it, right? And that has a bit to do with the history of accounting. And I maybe want to start with this by saying how important accounting is in the history of humanity. So, for example, if we look at the origin of accounting, that's actually also the origin of the state. So it's in Mesopotamia. I don't know, 2000 BC, I've got the exact dating, but it's in the book Against the Grain from James Scott, which I really recommend. So the first tablets of clay with language are actually accounting tablets. You know, it's the grain coming in and out of the royal temples. And so that's very important. And I learned, for example, that for 1000 years, language was not the written language was not used to represent speech, but to represent accounting. That's really interesting. Then the second phase is the reorganization of accounting by a Franciscan monk in Italy, Lucio Paccio, if I pronounce it right. And he invented double entry book accounting. And this is very important because double entry book accounting is really about what comes in my entity, my closed entity, my firm, and what goes out of my firm. And again, you have no vision of the natural world of what you do to people. It's simply, you know, economic value and whether you have profit and capital going up within your own. And so it's really more kind of narcissistic accounting that is the basis of our current economy. And so here's the question is, can we change that? Can we have forms of accounting that can reflect not just the value of the commodity, but the value of, you know, what we do with people and the environment? And so that for me is the third accounting evolution. And it's connected a bit to the emergence of the blockchain. Whatever we think about the blockchain, what it does, it creates an infrastructure for shared accounting. So we can move potentially from closed accounting to ecosystem accounting. And so nearly all the blockchain projects you can look at, that's what it is about. There are open collaborative systems where people can come in and out and they can share accounting and logistics to the degree that they want to. So I think that's a very important step. So sometimes I say to make it easy for people who are not technical, and I'm not very technical myself, you know, we move from the internet of communication to the internet of transaction. And what that means is that what we have developed around open source and urban commons, you know, what I call the stigmergic collaboration, so mutual signaling, that is now possible to do in physical production. Before the blockchain, we did it for open source, so knowledge, design and software, but now we can actually do it for everything that's represented through accounting. Any flow that we can represent to accounting can be subjected to the same capacity of looking at each other in an ecosystem and adapting our behavior in real time if we want to. So that's really what I want to talk about. So what we did, and this is what we usually do at the P2B Foundation, is so we don't say how things should be, we actually look at what we call seed forms. And seed forms are, you know, basically you have a system in crisis, we can solve it within the logic of the system. And so people start exiting the system and try to solve their problems in new ways. And these new ways potentially represent, you know, something that comes after the crisis. So you think about the medieval times, you know, you have the invention of purgatory. So suddenly you can be a Christian, you can lend money. There's the printing press, there's double entry book accounting. So this is actually the basis of capitalism. That's what we're talking about. And so in the report, I mention three new forms of accounting. The first one is contributive accounting. So typically any open source community where, you know, which is open for permissionless contributions will have the same issue, which is you have a whole community that is co-creating value, co-creating use value, something that is useful for everyone, like the Linux operating system or Wikipedia or whatever. Now, then the market, you know, over time, a market is created around these open source commons. And then the issue becomes, well, only some people can actually realize their value through the market. And so typically what you have is a lot of people will contribute to an open source system, but only some of them, you know, can make a living through their efforts. And so there's a question of equity and fairness, which is typical for open source projects, which is how do you deal with that dynamic? And so the solution to this is contributive accounting. So very easy, the basic principle is you have a community, you have some kind of membrane around the community. And what you do is that you say, okay, so whatever comes from the outside, which can be government subsidies or, you know, market income. And now I have a plane flying over, so I'll just pause for 15, 20 seconds just to make sure you can hear me. All right. You can hear me? I'll just continue then. So contributive accounting are basically schemes where you differentiate between the outer and the inner. And so you're going to redistribute a part, at least a part of what is coming in with a different system internal to the community. To make a very simple example, you have a translators collective. They do a lot of things for free, so they count their characters. And they say, well, anybody has a contract to translate a book, which is partly due to the co-creation of the value we did together, well, 15% of that will go in the second accounting scheme, and that will fund the contributions, right? And, you know, my friends at Commons Transition, they have this booklet about disco co-ops. That's about that. It's how do you create internally a more just and fair value distribution based on not just commodity value, but on contributions. So basically, you know, I call this value sovereignty, right? You declare within your community that you're going to treat value in a certain way that is different from the mainstream economy. And by the way, this is nothing new. If you know Bernard Lietard, The Mystery of Money, which exists in German, he will tell you that throughout history, there's always been two kinds of currencies. You had the royal currency, the extractive currency, which was to fund the army, basically. And then local communities often had different currencies. For example, in Bali, I live in Thailand, so this is my neighbor. In Bali, they have a currency for the watershed, you know, to fund the watershed maintenance in these communities. It coexists with the national money. All right. The second form of accounting is flow accounting. And that's something that exists for the last 20, 25 years, maybe, but is now taking off. And that's called REA, Resources Event Agents. And I call this post-capitalist accounting because just like contributive accounting, it moves away from the pure commodity value system. And what you do in flow accounting is saying, well, you don't have double entry, so you don't have a closed entity. But every transaction represented is a 3D picture of where you place this in the ecosystem, right? The resource, the event, the exchange, and the agents that are doing this transaction. And that is visible, again, to all the people in this open ecosystem. So this is the second form of accounting. And the third form of accounting that I discuss is called thermodynamic accounting, you could say. So matter energy flows. There's different projects if you want to look it up. MUSIASEM, MUSIASEM, is based in Barcelona, but the one that I looked at is called Global Thresholds and Allocations from R3.0. And these people are multi-capitalists, so they want to take into account not just financial capital, but environmental and human capital. And they want to treat these three capitals equally. So this means that today, if you cheat with the finances, you can end up in jail. But you can end up in jail if you do something bad to the people or the planet. If you recognize those three capitals, then you would actually also be liable for how you treat these externalities. Okay, we're not there yet because that would require a lot of legal reforms and probably social struggles. But one of their innovations, which is really interesting, is called global thresholds and allocations. So what does that mean is that you have some institution, a global institution, that basically is a group of scientists that monitor the availability of resources. So not just the planetary boundaries, as described by Kate Raworth, but all the commodities. So there's a list of 131, they call this commodity ecologies. And so imagine a group that just keeps track of what is available in the world in terms of copper. What is the expected findings of copper in per year, based on a historical average? what is the growth of productivity in the use of that material? And also, what is the biocircularity? So if you reuse copper, how much copper is left? I think it's 70%. So, you know, they have these tables. And so what we can do and what they're prototyping and experimenting with is diffusing this knowledge of flows of matter and energy into every accounting system. And that begins to become quite exciting to me, because that means that you know, you have the capacity as an agent, so it doesn't have to be top down, you know, like rationing, which could happen if we, you know, continue like what we're doing today. But you actually enable and empower all the agents in the distributed system to make decisions within that framework, right? So, and I want to continue with this, with kind of trying to convince you that this opens up a vision of a new, what I call a cyber physical infrastructure for production for human needs within planetary boundaries. And it's based on three different levels. And I think most of you are too young to know about these debates, but in the 1930s, there was a huge debate, it was called the calculation debate. And you had the old style socialists who were saying, you know, we need to plan, rationally plan the economy. Not just the Marxists, we had Karl Polanyi and others were also involved in this debate. And on the other hand, you had Schumpeter and Hayek saying, no, this is not possible. We need markets to do that. And of course, the market economists won this debate. But I think it's possible to do three things, which is take the best of the commons, so stigmergic collaboration, take the best of the market, pricing, as a signal for allocation, and take the best of planning, which is within the sense of frameworks that determine the degree of freedom within certain frameworks. So the first layer would be stigmergic collaboration. You're in an open ecosystem, you see what everybody else is doing, and so you can adjust your behavior because you have a holoptical knowledge of the whole system, right? Just as if you do Linux or Wikipedia, you know what everybody else is doing, and so you can adjust your contribution. That's the same idea. But it's now moving from just knowledge, design, and software to accounting and logistics and coordinating physical production. The second thing you can do is to inject what I call generative market practices. You might be familiar with radical exchange. There's a group of people that are specialized in this. You know, how do you can use market techniques to actually have fair and equitable outcomes, how to do that. So they focus on that. And for example, you would have a proposal like Fishcoin, which basically says, you know, this is a cryptocurrency for the fishing industry, which represents the reproduction capacity of the fish. So it's not a money that is blind to externalities, but it's a form of money that is intelligent and integrates that knowledge in itself, right? So you only distribute as many fish coins, then there is fish that you can fish without endangering the reproduction of the fish. It's just one example. So you could have a whole series of these specialized currencies that, you know, manage specialized markets within certain constraints. And then the third level is what I call orchestrated planning. And so I'd like to introduce a little concept. I call it the fifth magisterium of the commons. I got it from a friend of mine called Robert Conan Doyle, Ryan. Sorry, I forgot his name. Robert Conan Ryan, I think. And so his idea, and I resonates with me, is that we have four magisteria. That's politics, that regulates what we get from the state. The economy, who gets the surplus. The culture, what can be said and not said. And science, which legitimizes facts. And, you know, they're relatively independent functions in our societies, that they're even beyond the nation state. They regulated at national levels. And I would suggest that we also need a magisterium of the commons. In other words, we need a capacity to manage and protect human communities and extra human resources and communities, right? So basically the humanity embedded in the web of life. And you might be interested in that. I won't have time to explain. We have now movements like the Sovereign Nature Movement, you know, that proposes to have DAOs, right? You have forest commons, it's a DAO, it has sensors, it can mobilize lawyers when there is overgrazing or overcutting of its wood. It can generate income, and it can actually distribute that income to the contributors who protect that commons, in that case, that forest. It's just an example of how this might work in the future. But so you see, you have a kind of an idea that I'm proposing is to integrate the best of the commons, which is the collaboration, open collaboration effect, the best of the market, and also orchestrated planning, which is used as a framework. So you're free within a certain framework. You can do what you want, but you can't destroy the conditions of life. That's the basic idea, all right? And so we need institutions that can protect that, and we don't have them yet. But that's basically what I wanted to tell you, so that, you know, as we transition to a more stable human system that can live for a longer period of time in balance with nature, that actually we are starting to have the technological means to do that. And these already exist, they're being prototyped, experimented with. So this is not just utopian, this is actually something that is ongoing. And of course, technology alone is not the answer, because you need institutional change to make that work as well. But as you know, we work on public commons cooperation protocols at the P2P Foundation, and that's also moving quite fast in the world. So I think that, you know, what they say in China, crisis is opportunity, is the same word. So the more we enter in this downward spiral of systemic crisis, the more also people are motivated to look for alternatives. And so all these seed forms start to make sense, and all these patterns start interconnecting with each other, and can kind of be a prefigurative vision of a potential new economics. And so I also finished, and you can ask me maybe via Eugene or something, I have a three-chapter commons economics textbook that we are pre-publishing privately for the moment. So if you're interested in knowing more, and then P2P accounting for planetary survival, if you look it up in Google, you'll find it. In the full text, which explains what the story I was just telling you now. So that's the basic story.
Thank you, Misha. Thank you very much. I think our audience really enjoyed it. And somebody is asking in our Telegram Q&A, which I also invite you to join if you want. They're interested in all those references, and I told them to look in the book, but I also ask you if you want to just share a few links with me, also via email. I can put them in the chat. And actually, let me just change the view so we can also have Oliver and Jakob on. And Oliver, I think you were really interested during the conversation. You're muted.
Oh, I'm muted. Yeah, thanks, Michelle, for taking the time to lay this all out. There was so many interesting and new concepts also for me that I want to dig into afterwards. And it's also nice, it's the first time we managed actually to see each other on a video call. Has been a while. My question that came up is, like, when you're a small organization or a startup that wants to start deploying internally these processes of better accounting, better value, specifically value accounting, what do you recommend diving into, reading? What practices are really useful, or maybe small practices that you at the P2P Foundation already use to do this? Maybe
there is no handbook for the moment, because all this is fairly new. So we have one little booklet. It's called Value in the Commons, which is just to help you think differently about what value is. Then, of course, P2P Accounting for Planetary Survival, which gives you access to these sources. So, you know, like Sensorica, for example, is a really good example of a very sophisticated contributor accounting system. They've been doing it for 10 years already. The DISCO book, which is Sensorica. Sensorica, it's open hardware commons. They make sensors. And they have a very sophisticated, it's Canadian, Tiberius Brăștănivău. I hope I don't misspell his Romanian name. They have a lot of literature online about the project, and they're very sophisticated. You know, for example, they put all the collective property, which is called non-dominium. That might be interesting just to explain to the audience. So dominium is, you know, the normal private property. I'm the master, you know, dominus of my property, and I can do what I want with it. Non-dominium is it belongs to nobody in particular, but to everyone at the same time. And so what you can do, for example, in the case of Sensorica, is you need a machine. You know, you can crowdfund the machine, but the machine goes into the property of the trust. And so anybody else in the system can then also start using the machine, right? So you have a system then for the collective use of the machine. So you're mutualizing, you know, the hardware, as it were, in that system as well. So it's a very interesting and sophisticated system. And then DISCO, which I forgot what it means, but it's, you know, kind of like a DAO, but for the commons. And that's by friends of mine, Stacco Troncoso and commonstransition.org. So you might have a look in that. I have a section in my wiki, which is wiki.p2pfoundation.net. And I have, a lot of documentation under the section P2P accounting as well. So until now, basically, unfortunately, what you need to do is talk to people like Tibi or me. And we know many people, we're very well connected with the people doing that. And we'll say, well, you know, talk to them. And then you will, you know, learn about it by yourself. And then you can say, okay, can I contextualize this in my own situation, right? And then do your own thing. There's no standardization yet. We're in the period of Cambrian explosion of these new accounting systems.
Yeah, in this direction goes my question as well. Like, what is the field where you feel like you gave some examples, but like, interesting how this pattern then also will interact, how the fish coin will interact with the tree coin. But how do you envision the implementation of these new accounting systems? How is the interplay between, you have some foresight.
Yeah, well, that's a bit of a problem. So it's a bit what I said about the Cambrian explosion, right? So it's a big problem within the commons. And I'll just give you an example. So I was in Tuscany a few years ago, and they had 16 different pieces of software to order organic food in the solidarity economy only, right? So this is a big problem. People are reinventing the wheel all the time. So what I'm advocating, and I actually believe in public commons cooperation. So I think that, you know, we will have public institutions in the future as well. There's no way around it. And so we look at, can we have optimal relationship between the commons and the public sphere, you know, so that the commons remain free and autonomous, but can still cooperate with the public sector, right? And so here's a thing you could do. I don't know if you know John Takara. He works with something called factor 20 reduction, which I'm very enthusiastic about. For example, if you want to do transport of goods and services in a city like Berlin, if you use cargo bikes and pedelecs, you can do that with 98% less energy and still do the same amount of transport, right? So the idea is that we have to start mutualizing our provisioning systems, all of them. You know, real estate, housing, so shared mobility, shared housing, shared organic food. And then we built ecosystems that in those provisioning systems. So for example, community supported agriculture is a good example, right? It's an ecosystem that combines a group of consumers and a group of organic producers. And, you know, they're still buying it from each other, but the ecosystem is a commons. It's not based on a power relationship, it's based on solidarity and cooperation between all the partners in the ecosystem, right? And so the kind of basic attitude that I advocate is the idea of reverse cooptation. What you do is, what kind of collaboration do we need with public authorities to make our commons work? And what kind of market mechanisms do we need for commons to make our commons work, right? And so instead of having the opposite, which is, you know, capital eating the commons and extracting value from the commons, you have to reverse the logic and start thinking, like, how do we preserve our community? How can we preserve our livelihoods? And start organizing ourselves so that, you know, this, that we get a bigger part of the surplus. And, you know, if you think about the blockchain that way, I'm, you know, in Chiang Mai, it's the capital of digital nomads. So we have a lot of people here developing these ecosystems. And, you know, that's already how they start thinking, right? They when you do a crowdfunding ICO, and, you know, we can be critical about the hyper-capitalist aspects of this, but it can be done in different ways. Basically, what you're doing is, first of all, you're distributing the capital. You're no longer dependent on just one bank or one venture capital. The whole world can participate in your project. And you consider the coin as micro shares in, you know, what is the expected value of your project is. And then they keep 40% of the tokens for labor. And that's really interesting. And then you have progressive groups like EXA, Economic Space Agency, like Commons Engine, like Commons Stack, like the Holochain. And these are all blockchain or, you know, post-blockchain oriented projects that have these other values embedded in them. And then finally, sorry, I'm rambling on. The idea is to create, what I would create is coalitions of public players, solidarity and impact and solidarity finance players, and the commons to mutualize development of these infrastructures, right? So if you do shared mobility, you know, like Co-op Cycle, for example, you know, you could have an alliance of cities supporting this for all the cities in the world. If you want to have, you know, fair BNB type solutions, you could have these alliances funding open source depositories. And so this is something I call protocol co-ops, protocol cooperatives. They invest collectively in open source depositories, which can be used by everyone. And then you contextualize it, you localize it, but you don't have to redo everything every time. And that's the problem. So if I can say one thing more thing about this, you know, I've been following open source cars for 12 years now. None of them has worked except maybe Open Motors, which is more like a white product. They don't really operate publicly. And Local Motors, which is just crowdsourcing design, but none of them has really worked well. And now you have this company called Arrival, and they do everything with proprietary software. So finally we have distributed manufacturing, but instead of having an open system, we're gonna get yet another proprietary system with one company controlling everything, right? And that's very sad to me that we had 10 years to do this and we haven't succeeded in doing this. So, you know, if we're too slow, we're gonna miss a lot of opportunities.
This brings me actually to one of the next questions I had, which is, in thinking about building up these regenerative processes of value accounting, and now the example that you brought with the open source cars, why do you think this didn't work? Why do you think it only worked once, or like started to work? I never heard of that company, so I assume it's, but a player that you consider as being maybe more.
Yeah, they have 1,000 software engineers, so they're extremely well capitalized. Mm-hmm. And they have a big factory in London. I think they're actually in Berlin as well, but I'm not sure about the details. But, you know, they have their videos. You can check them in YouTube. It's very impressive. They, mm-hmm. you know, they have the whole thing is ready. It's like, you know, hub and spoke. You can install the factory in a week, and then they can start building vans and buses for the cities, which is something I dreamed about 10 years ago. And technically it was possible. So the problem is that open source itself works because, you know, it's bodies voluntarily working. You know what I mean? Like any software engineer can say, I'm going to do, you know, open source software, and you can live with your parents until you're 40 and you can do it. You know, a bit but once you need buildings, materials, you need capital, right? And so what I'm thinking we need to do is to find a connection between the cooperative world, which has a lot of money, you know, the big co-ops, and the open source world. And that hasn't happened yet. So, and that's a problem. So it comes down to funding and to find ways to solve that issue, which hasn't been solved yet. So what we're doing instead, and this is not bad, of course, is that we're starting with all the small stuff, right? So I don't know if you know the multi-factory model. So these are craftspeople coming together all over Europe, looking for empty factories. And then they work with wood, 3D printing, metal, iron, and they work with open source and cooperative principles. And there's 120 of them in Europe already. And they have an invisible factory where they, you know, kind of do their open source collaboration. They exist. Or in France, you have a huge federation of farmers called Atelier Paysan, and they already made like thousands of designs for, you know, machines for farmers, open source machines. They're much more successful than open source ecology. So these things exist, but they exist where there are low capital requirements. So they still function, you know, a bit in the periphery of the system.
You're already unmuted. You were already unmuted, Jakob. You need to unmute yourself again.
I feel we definitely need a follow-up conversation on this one, because we will continue the placemaking the solar punk beyond the CCC as well. And I mean, we will come back later today to the scope of the city, having a conversation on municipalism and the Fearless City movement, and for the framework of placemaking the solar bank, we were really coming a lot from the kind of really neighborhood scale level, and a lot of the ecosystem building just needs to come from really a different, even state innovation, or like from different kind of powers that support that. On the other side, I'm already very inspired, and I feel we can just wrap up here and keep the continuity open, as well as for our listeners in the chat to engage further and see how this can be.
Yeah. I'm open to any form of collaboration, or, you know, more talks, whatever you need to.
Cool.
And eager to learn also, of course.
Awesome. Thank you for joining, Michel, very much.
Thank you.
We'll see in 5 minutes with an exciting workshop on this channel. Stay tuned.